Hello, you are listening to CITR 101.9, and you have just heard the end of Give 'em the Boot, our Italian show with Linda B. And now it's time for another Linda B, which is I, and my show is called Besneric Rhyme. For those of you who've heard the show before, it's a poetry show, and the idea is that every week I choose one poem by a local poet, although in this case I actually have a sneaky American who snuck up here for a festival, so he's not actually local, but he was in town. I take one poem by that poet, and then the poet and I do the thing in the poem while talking about the poem, i.e. if it's a poem about bowling, we go bowling, we discuss poems, we discuss bowling, we discuss why bowling is just so poetic. So in this case, The poet in question is Dean Young. He is an American guy who was up here in October for the International Writers Festival, of which there is another one coming up soon, next week, actually, I think. And he is faculty at the Writers' Workshop at the University of Iowa, and also does work with the Low Residency program at Warren Wilson. And his most recent book is called Elegy for Toy Piano, and I've taken a poem from that called True False, which is the one that you're going to be hearing about. So sit back, and I'm going to play you that interview, which is actually, this is a rebroadcast. I actually broadcast this interview. It was the very first show, so we can get all nostalgic together. Okay. Here's Dean Young.
True, false. One, usually my first answer is correct. Two, I want to break things. Three, I hear voices. Four, I am good at following orders. Five, I like jury duty. Six, washing your hands six times a day isn't excessive. Seven, I am a good singer. Eight, I never had sex with an animal. Nine, I am fascinated by fire. 10, sometimes when I'm alone, I cry for no reason. 11, I like to have my teeth cleaned. 12, there are too many stars. 13, I no longer smoke. 14, I intentionally miss belt loops so no one thinks I'm too involved with appearances. 15, terrible things have happened to me. 16, I would like to design evening wear. 17, a peephole is most effective when you have to stoop. 18, quarks exist only in theory, thank God. 19, our water is poison. 20, if I were jumping out of an airplane, I'd want to pack my own chute. 21, my parents were cruel to me. 22, don't shop at Pottery Barn. 23, sometimes I get feelings of deja vu. 24, in badminton, the birdie causes far more injuries than the racket. 26, it is a waste of time to try to understand people. 27, I cannot sleep. 28, rock and roll changed the world. 29, throwing like a girl is proof of physical inadequacy. 30, sometimes my headaches last for days. 31, use a number 2 pencil. 32, I don't mind spending extra time on flowers. 33, I see nothing wrong with implants. 34, there are more colors now than 20 years ago. 35, I like sponge cake. 36, my wrong answers won't count against me. 37, I am a murderer. 38, AIDS is not caused by a virus, it is the drugs that make people sick. 39, Christmas lights are okay in Mexican restaurants year-round. 40, the cat is superior to the dog. 41, some of the commandments seem extreme. 42, if you limp with aces, you'll never fold with aces. 43, Everyone should study history because the present is too complicated and no one knows a fucking thing about the future. 44, I would have been a good cowboy. 45, don't stand so close to me. 46, I could write a novel if I had the time. 47, the homeless are dangerous. 48, plastic utensils cause cancer. 49, no one asked you. 50, Tony made a mistake getting married. 51, Tony made a mistake getting divorced. 52, parking meters lie. 53, stay out of Indiana. 54, there's a number missing. 55, bicycles keep getting better. 56, glitter should be strewn, never drizzled. 57, mashing a modern clock isn't very satisfying. 58, criminals should not be allowed to lift weights. 59, the male pelican is responsible for hatching the egg. 60, before answering a question, consider who is asking and why. 61, don't let Mary drive. 62, most hospitals keep some leeches just in case. 63, spaghetti is done when it sticks to the wall. 64, stay with me and be my love. 65, spending a major holiday alone, too bad the zoo's closed. 66, the meaning of every word comes from context, and whereas context is created by other words, meaning can never be fixed, but you can cross a stream on loose, slippery rocks without getting wet by keeping a strong forward momentum. 67, tiny transmitters have been put in my back teeth. 68, they are shadows thrown against a cave wall. 69, I worry about what's happening to the apostrophe. 70, sometimes I get feelings of deja vu. 71, I wish I was younger. 72, I am an orphan. 73, I play piano. 74, zinc. 75, I'd like to improve the teleology of my vocabulary. 76, I wonder what happens to my garbage. 77, here's 50 cents. 78, a woman eating a banana. 79, everything worth doing has been done. 80, we are number one. 81, there are too many cell phone plans. 82, the night is cold, the wind is sharp. 83, a heart attack is no longer a big deal. 84, a single diamond makes the point. 85, Iceland is the last frontier. 86, it is worse to lose an eye than a thumb. 87, I believe in God. 88, literacy is higher than ever, but reading is at an all-time low. 89, the policeman is there to help you. 90, I like to have my eyes examined. 91, you can't construct a workable model of the universe using only four dimensions. 92, a baby comes when the mother and the father take a shower together. 93, earthquake preparedness, what a joke. 94, crop circles are proof. 95, I often have unexplained pains. 96, I've cooked joints. 97, I wet the bed. 98, I'm sorry. 99, between 10 to 20% is always a waste. 100, the results of this test will be kept confidential.
That was Dean Young reading his poem True False. True False questions are something you might remember from grade 7 science class. Kind of great because they give you a fighting chance. The two possible answers are right there in front of you. If you pick one, you've got a 1 in 2 chance of being right. But true-false questions are also kind of terrifying. You can't hedge your bets. You can't tiptoe around the question, make stuff up. You can't have it both ways. Usually, in an interview, the idea is to ask open-ended questions that let the person you're talking to really get expansive, wax philosophical, explore gray areas. So I thought I'd see what would happen if I made a poet like Dean Young act like a grade 7 science student. Here's what happened.
True or false? True false questions and yes or no questions are the same thing.
Well, true false usually means that you are answering a question about something that exists independently of you. Yes, no seems to be concerned with some kind of dialogue in which the answer that comes from you is controlled by you. I think that might be a little bit of a difference. Like, true or false, it's sunny out today, that's true or false, but, you know, do you like grapes is more yes or no.
The statement zinc is an assertion. True or false?
It's actually a question. False.
True or false, the implied addressee here does not change.
Yes, I think that's true. I think that's an important one for the poem because it's supposed to be, it's modeled on the kinds of tests you take. It's actually modeled on an actual test that was given to prospective employees of Walmart. Basically to trick them into saying things to find out if they would steal stuff or couldn't be trusted. It's a psychological test.
True or false, a simplified choice, a binary yes, no, true, false answer to a question like, my parents were cruel to me, can never bring anyone closer to understanding a situation.
Well, I don't think that's true. That's false. Because understanding any situation, the first thing you have to do is take a position. You have to occupy some point. Whether or not you move from that point is beside the point, but you have to be somewhere to get somewhere. So to take a position is the beginning. You don't have to stay there. But if you don't take a position, if you don't say yes or no, true or false, there's nowhere to go because you're not anywhere.
False. A true-false response assumes that there is a moral dimension to any question.
I think that's false, but it's an interesting question because there is the cloud of a moral dimension to truth because we think that falsity is connected to evil, whether intentional or unintentional. But to say that, is it true that the Detroit Tigers are going to win the World Series? I mean, that's all projection right now, but it will become a historical fact one way or the other. So the answer has no moral worth. But if you say the wrong one, you're a liar.
True or false, the final lines of a poem bear the bulk of its weight.
Well, I would say, I don't know if we could say quite bulk of his weight, but the last line of a poem is incredibly important. Poetry is all about coming to an end. The very nature of a line defines itself as something that comes to an end. And the way the line comes to the end, the governing impulse or rules of it is what establishes the prosody and the form of the poem. So the last line is doubly important because every line to some extent has an end in it, and the last line then is sort of doubly end because it has the end of itself and it also has the end of the poem, and it's there where the form is complete. You know, everything else is no, you know, it's not on the page. The poem has, there's no more words, so that's the moment that the poem has been moving towards, and then it is a completed form if it's a good poem. Well, this poem specifically is you know, the completed form of this was 100. You know, in the nature, you know, 100 questions. So that was predetermined in a way, artificially predetermined in a way that most of my poems aren't. You know, I'm not really that concerned with mathematics. But because of the form that this is sort of aping, that it is stealing, that came predetermined. So then the question is, what do you want occupying that position? You know, because to some extent, anything can occupy that position if it's already determined that what is dictating it is its finality, is the 100. So I tried to put something in this poem that would, in a way, reflect back on the poem and bring out further ironies of the whole thing.
True or false? funny poems pander to an audience's insecurities about poetry as a high or otherwise incomprehensible art form?
Gee, I have to say pander. Well, I think it's true that comedy relieves tension. That's one of the things it's there for. And a comic source is to create something that's unexpected. And one of the things that can be unexpected in poetry is a turn away from the more sort of formal and conventional notions of poetic attitude. So, you know, could go from being, you know, low-minded and, or if we go, you know, vulgar or whatever. So that's true. But it's you know, poetry can do everything and has been doing everything for a long time. I mean, you know, Baudelaire wrote a poem about syphilis, and, you know, it's not necessarily funny, but it is a poem that affronts our sort of conventional expectations of the manners and attitude of poetry. But those manners and attitudes have been under attack for so long, they're persistent in a way, but it's amazing they are.
The grade 7 science test is an art. Defining art really isn't a science. Dean and I had a hard time defining exactly what kind of aesthetic informs his work. I would ask a question like, true or false, the aesthetic at work here and in the book as a whole is one of accumulation. Dean would say things like, now what do you mean by that? I tried to keep quiet, leaving him no option but to answer true or false to the question. What I learned from this was essentially that the answer to the question, true or false, poets don't like it when you try to pin down their aesthetic for them, is true. We moved on.
True or false? The true-false binary is a straw man argument.
Well, no, I think that's false. You know, nerves can only do one thing. They turn off or they turn on. And all our thinking and all physical processes relate to this basic yes or no, on or off principle. And so there's something deeply, deeply true about it. All our complexities, you know, everything. You know, our genetic code comes down to the arrangement of four bases just over and over again. So it's not a straw man. It's actually something that, you know, I'll stick up for the vague and imprecise. I'll stick up for the big field of maybe and the irrational world of yes and no. But they exist. Maybe the problem is that true or false, yes or no. And we have many occasions, especially in our emotional lives, that is that true and false, yes and no.
True or false? The dynamic between a questioner and one being questioned always assumes a deliberate withholding of information, whether from the questioner or withheld from the conscious mind of the one being questioned.
I think that's true, but that's not the only paradigm in which we understand it, but that's definitely true. That's one of the natures. Another nature of the questioning is an interrogation. You know, so there's a willingness, on one hand, there's the willingness to impart information, and then there's the lack of willingness to impart information. So that's sort of one pole. And then the other pole is what you know and what you don't know. So, you know, you can try to disguise the fact that you don't know something, or you can try to disguise the fact that you do know something, or you can confess something that you know, but you can also confess something that you don't know and pretend you do know it. And so there are other factors, but that, yeah. Yeah, I it just seems to me that what we're talking about is the dialogic paradigm of one voice asking a question and response, question and response. And it just seems to me that, I mean, for one thing, it's the basis of eros, of the interaction with the other. And, you know, as far as being human, that's as complicated as it gets. So there's always this sort of, there is a kind of erotics of question and answer. You know, it's a game, as well as an interrogation, as well as something that leads to judgment. It can be both playful and terrifying.
True or false, this should be considered a list poem and draws on other list poems in terms of structure and ideas about juxtaposition.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, it'd be hard not to consider it a Liszt poem, considering that it's itemized, you know, 1, 2, 3. Yeah, the list is one of the sort of forms of poetry that exists everywhere. In fact, our earliest writings seem to be bills of sales, they're lists. And it's entirely possible that they were poems too, and that's what the first poems were. It was lists of items, and you know the nature of cataloging in both the Iliad and the Odyssey, and so the list is something that's very, very present in poetry. And one of the things that, you know, if everybody has lists of what they need at the grocery store and little pieces of paper on the refrigerator, and it's interesting to think about what forms those take. Sometimes they're based upon need, that what's on that list is a reflection of need in the order of the need. Other times, you know, when you're making a bigger list, you know, you can sort of do it by places in the grocery store, or that, you know, you're thinking of menus, so you group stuff up. So that's the discovery of form out of what is the basic list. A list in and of itself is sort of where a form can begin, but you know, there needs to be, I think, there can be other shaping impulses that go into effect. Like grocery stores, you know, why can't we ever find the light bulbs? Because they don't go anywhere. You know, no one can figure out in the form of the grocery store where the light bulbs go. But, you know, everybody knows that the canned tomatoes and the can, you know, all the canned stuff goes together, and they put the candy right next to the kid's cereal. Everybody knows that. They put the prophylactics right next to the what do they call that, women's hygiene products.
True or false, everything complex can be put into simple words without losing what's essential.
That's totally false. You even know that's false. Yeah, that's not false. Some things are complicated and remain complicated, and they can only be complicated further by language. I mean, language has its own complications. I mean, just because, I forget what they call it in science, but there's the notion that the simple solution is the correct solution. And sometimes it's referred to as elegance. That's not always true in language. You know, language brings its own complications, and also some things are complicated, and they can't be reduced to simple stuff. That's one of the reasons poetry is hard.
True or false, surrealist is a term overused to describe your work.
Well, I'm sick of hearing it, so that's true. I mean, everybody has to be called something, I think, at a certain point. So, you know, sure, I'm very interested in surrealism. Surrealism has informed my aesthetic and therefore everything I think about the world. I think it's this single most important, the manifestos of surrealism are the single most important artistic statements of the 20th century. I believe that. It's theory of the enervation of the imagination and its rescue attempt of it, I think, are vitally important and have vast applications. I mean, we can see tendencies of surrealism in Thoreau. You can see it deeply informs romanticism, and you know, it's something obviously that both the philosophy and also the aesthetic practices that have helped me out a lot. But you know, a lot of times when people use the word surreal, they just mean weird. It's okay to be called weird.
True or false, any list with internal contradictions has at its core a kind of sadness of futility.
Oh, nicely put. Yeah, I'm gonna say true, even if I'm not sure it's true, but it sounds beautiful. Yeah, you know, and that's one of the interesting things. I mean, that's what interested me trying to do in that poem to some extent. This notion of true and false is that something's true. If it's something's true once, it's true all the time. Well, maybe not. You know, maybe the very nature of a thing happening twice makes it different the second time it happens, so our position in relationship to it has by necessity changed. You can like something once, second time you might not like it. And I suppose there is a certain melancholy, because one becomes aware of a past then. The past does in fact have influence, and therefore weight, and therefore a sense of this, some other experience cannot be recovered, and we are living in an aftermath.
Old or New Testament? I think the New Testament.
The question is, Pilate. You remember Pilate from the New Testament?
Pontius Pilate. He fiddled while...
Yeah, no, well, just a minute. Let me ask the question, then you can give me the answer, okay? Did Pilate want Jesus to be crucified?
Pontius Pilate washed his hands of it.
So did he want him to be crucified?
Yeah.
No. No. No.
Well, tune in every Friday afternoon, 3:30 to the Night Watch Show on Sylvia!
Well, find a good church. It'll help you.
Okay, so that was an interview with Dean Young, who was in town in the fall for the International Writers Conference. That poem called True False can be found in his book Elegy for Toy Piano, which came out in 2005 with the University of Pittsburgh Press and was actually nominated for a Pulitzer. As a finalist, I believe, actually, for the Pulitzer. So I'm just about reached the end of my time slot. You've been listening to Besnerek Rhyme on 101.9 CITR. And I think I'm just going to let you know about an upcoming poetry event on a very crinkly poster. So Prism International, which is actually UBC's, it's run out of UBC, it's a lit journal, and they are presenting a special reading on April 2nd, and that's going to be happening at Thea's Lounge at 7:30 p.m. And this is Trevor Harriet, Pastors Unsung, The Glory and Tragedy of Grassland. Grassland Birds, and eco-poet A. Rawlings, Wide Slumber for Lepidopterists, those are butterfly studiers, and yeah, this is about sort of eco-poets and a relationship between literature and the natural world, so if you are interested in that, it's called A Sense of Place, and yeah, that'll be happening on April 2nd at 7:30 in Thea's Lounge. So, that's it for me, and I'm going to leave you to hear our next show, which is Robert Waldman's Reel to Reels, the movie review show on CITR, and thanks for listening.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Reel to Reel at the Movies. Robert Waldman back in action. Lots of brand new movies to talk about, a couple of holdovers, and we might even be able to sneak in a live theater review and possibly a play. We're going to begin with a brand new movie called The Wind That Shakes the Barley. Trusted, noted filmmaker Ken Loach, to tackle this issue head-on, the issue of the Irish versus the British during the early 20th century, in his latest movie called The Wind That Shakes